You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Please let me welcome you back to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas and take this quick second to thank you for the fact that we're now enjoying our fifth season, and that's because of all of you, our listeners, that keep coming back and spreading the word about this incredible podcast. That's mostly because of our unbelievable lineup of EuroLeague stars, both current, past, plus coaches, general managers, and this year may be a little bit of a surprise. We'll see if we can work it out. But for today, let me introduce the man. If he wasn't my favorite player before, he just might be now after all this research I've done on him. Please welcome to the crossover one of the most versatile players that the Turkish Airlines has ever seen. A guy that can beat you from deep, take you off the dribble, Mr. Clutch at the end of the game. Some of you know him on his social media platform as Thrill21 or whatever it is. And so we all really know him as the EuroLeague champ, Final Four MVP, Wilt Clyburn. What's up, my man? How you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I couldn't wait to get you on the show, though. I don't even know where to start.
And I was wondering where you're going to get me out here, man. I've seen a lot of people. I was wondering when it was going to happen.
We're trying to save the best for last, you know what I mean? First of all, let me thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know, after I went through all your Instagrams and all your other stuff, and I saw you got like 27 kids up there in that house. Plus the practice and travel schedule for you to take time out for our listeners. I really appreciate it.
This is actually the peaceful time in the morning. They're school from 9 to 4, so we only have one here. So either I'm sleeping or we're both sleeping, one or the other.
I hear that. I've been there, done that, man. My days of that are over.
Can't wait for that day.
Second of all, you know I need to call you out here on my show, right, for calling me out for your league.
So no, it's not even me. It's my wife that's gonna get you.
It's her. Come on, man. She looks so sweet.
It's her that calls me and lets me know that you're doing it.
I did it. You know, I did you. Everybody who's listening, like I said, Will called me out on Twitter one day, and because I always call him, for some reason, I just call him Clyburn when I get excited. That O comes out, man. And he actually called me out and he said, man, when is your league going to understand? You said, come on, Joe R. Lucas. When is your league going to understand my name is Clyburn, not Clyburn?
At the beginning of the season, all the EuroLeague media days, you got to say your name correctly. And I'm like, somebody's playing around.
You know, with all the names that we have, all the names that we have to deal with in the EuroLeague, I can't believe I messed yours up.
Pretty simple. You're right.
I did your game the other day, but we don't want to talk too much about it. I did the Valencia game. And, man, I was focused on you, dude. I was focused on you. And I think one time during the game, I used the O. And I told you, it was when you made that baseline move and the dunk.
Okay.
And it just popped out. And I was like, damn, I can't do that, man.
You know, I didn't watch that game. I stayed away from that game. So you probably got away with it this time.
Yeah. But it was only once. I told you, I said, don't worry about it. I said, once you get to the Final Four, it'll be fixed. All right, let's get into the interview, man. Tell me, let's start out with mom, dad, brothers, sisters, family. Let's start out with that. Just to get going. What was your upbringing like?
Upbringing was, I wouldn't say normal. I had two great parents. Obviously, they weren't together, but they were both in my life consistently. So that was always good. I grew up with, like I said, we all had the same mom and dad, so we all grew up in the same household at one point. But it was pretty balanced dynamic. My dad handled sports, and my mom handled all the nurturing stuff. And pretty much that's how it goes in typical households. Dad's kind of the enforcer, and mom's kind of the nurturer.
And you have, I know you got one brother that's playing ball now. You have other brothers and sisters?
I have the youngest of the three is in Germany right now.
Okay.
NBC. And the middle child, he just got out the Navy maybe 2 years ago. So he's living back in Vegas, just working now. So, yeah.
Coming out the Navy, living in Vegas, man, that sounds dangerous.
Man, you know what? Anywhere could have been better than where he was in the Navy. Well, he You know what? I'm not going to say that because he was stationed in Hawaii.
Oh, come on, man.
I don't really like him complaining about that. He was stationed in Hawaii for like 3 or 4 years. So I'm like, okay, whatever.
But that's like that. That's like that good and bad thing, you know, where it's like, okay, I got the military over here, but I'm in Hawaii. So it could be worse.
Could be a lot worse.
Could be better also.
Yeah, true.
I always like to know what the first memory is for players. When they got that orange ball in their hand and you know you just and that feeling, that touch, because you know, I played a lot of sports. I played baseball, I played football, I played, you know, tennis and everything, but I was more of a baseball player. But man, my moment I think was in college, where I just decided like, this is what I really want to do with myself, you know. Finally I got a scholarship, whatever. But so it took me a while because I enjoyed all sports. Were you more of an other sports guy, or was it just basketball all the time?
Baseball as well.
Baseball?
Baseball was probably if you let my dad tell it, he said that was my best sport.
It was mine too, man. Same thing. I hated basketball between you and I.
Yeah, man. He wanted me to stick into baseball. But, man, I took off 1 year of baseball. And I don't think people realize if you take off 1 year – how fast things speed up for you.
Yeah.
And I went back to baseball after I took a year off, and the ball was just moving so fast within that year of missing baseball. It was unbelievable the speed that was going. I'm like, I can't see the ball.
What position you play?
I was playing first baseman. Catching was easy for me. It was just hitting part. Like, once I got back to that plate and that ball was coming down there, I said, there's no way I can do this anymore.
Yeah, man, it's hard. They say it's the hardest thing in sports to do, you know, to hit a 95-mile-an-hour ball that's coming at you, and it's moving.
I had the opportunity to start back in college as well at a junior college.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a practice, and the ball was even faster. And I was after taking, like, 4 years off. And I said, there's no way I get back out. There's nothing y'all can tell me right now to make me play this game again.
I did that. I did the same thing once, man. After the basketball season, I went and joined the college baseball team for a little bit just to see, you know, just to see if I really missed it as much as I thought I did. And the same thing, it was like, whoa, I said, these guys, because on top of it, I made the jump from high school baseball to college baseball. And the same thing when you were high school basketball to college basketball, man, it's a whole different level.
It was completely different.
Yeah. But what was that moment when you're like, all right, was that the moment when you're like, all right, basketball's my thing?
I think freshman year of high school, where I was like, okay, this is, if you can't play baseball anymore, basketball's going to be it. Like, you're going to have to stick with this, and that's it. But I gave an attempt. I gave it a good attempt. But after that, I was like, okay, basketball, this is it for me.
So your dad figured out that you made the right decision, right?
Yeah, he, you know what? He's
still hard-headed.
He's still there. Still thinks that I should have played baseball instead.
What part of the, because Detroit's not an easy city to grow up in. You're from, born and raised in Detroit, right?
Yes, Southwest Detroit. There's so many different parts of Detroit if you ask a lot of people. But yeah, I was just like any other part of inner city. You don't have the best, but like I said, it's not the worst. And once you live there so long, it becomes normal.
Right.
It becomes normal. You don't really realize how bad it was until you're older and you see in different things in different parts of the world. That's when you kind of realize, like, okay, yeah, I was in a terrible situation.
What kept you out of the bad stuff? What kept you out of, I don't know, maybe drugs, hanging out?
Just parents, family. Like, they definitely taught me right from wrong. They definitely let me know examples. Me and my father used to drive by places just to see how bad it was, just to show me an example of, like, hey, man, this is not what you want to do and whatnot. When I was younger, I remember living, like, right behind I don't know what you want to call it, a crack house. You see guys walking through your backyard. You don't say anything to them. You just let them go by. So it was – we kind of always had that example of what you don't want to be. And my parents did a great job of, like, keeping me on a straight line and letting me know, like, hey, there's other stuff in the world that you can get into besides this BS. So
did you ever have, because I personally went through the same thing. You know, we had like a halfway house down the street. We had a drug house, a crack house, you know, right in front of it. And I went through the same thing. And I found myself now, like you said, looking back, it almost seems a lot worse than you, because like you say, you just get used to it. It's just part of a normal daily life. But was there a point where you look back and like, man, if I would have hung out with that person, you know, for another month or two, or if I would have done this, man, I wouldn't be where I am today? Or were you always just on the straight and narrow?
Like my circle in high school was, I mean, like I said, middle school, high school was always good people. From when I was in eighth grade, my best friend, Mario, I was either at his house or he was at mine, but both our parents kept us on a straight line. Whenever we were together, we didn't have to, they all kept us in a straight line, both of them. So never a situation where I'm like, okay, I can get in some trouble here. They made sure that, like I said, that we knew, stay out of this, that we don't have no problems with them. And I think that was the biggest thing. You don't want to have a problem with your parents then over here another way.
To me, there was always with my parents, I had the same thing. My parents were together, which sometimes wasn't the best thing either, but it is what it was. But there was a fine line. And now you're a parent of three kids, so we'll talk about that later. But there's a fine line, I always say, between fear and respect. You know, number one, I never wanted to disappoint my parents. That was a big thing for me. So I don't want to come home like, you know, smoking drugs or high or whatever, or drunk. And number two was the fear of the fact that, man, if my father catches me, what, he's going to take me out back and take care of things.
You know, I think that was, you know what, both. You basically fear and respect. Me and my brothers were always just terrified of my dad. He never did it. He never.
Same here.
Bro, he was just the fact of like what he might do. And you right. That right there kept you in line. And I tell people all the time, man, I laugh about it now. My dad used to attack me psychologically. And it was never like, you never knew what was coming. Like, he would do stuff like cut my hair.
Oh, man. Like,
oh, man. And he was the worst barber. Oh, my God. He was terrible. And like, man, you do something, he like, go get the clippers. So like, he was attacking you mentally. And
back in the day, it used to be go get the belt. Now it's the clippers.
Go get the clippers. He dope.
My dad did that one time, man, when I came back with like, I think my freshman year, I came back with a 0.9 grade point average. I was out partying every night, you know, at Niagara. And he sat me down. He just looked at me. He's like, he said, look, man. He says, your mom and dad come to every game. Your brothers and sisters come to every game. They got you up on this pedestal, you know. And he said, when you're working at Burger King, flipping burgers and making Whoppers, he says, I guarantee no one's going to come check you out. And I just looked at him. I was like, man, hit me. if you just hit me, the bruises will go away. The pain will go away, you know, but that phrase stuck with me forever, man. And it kind of made me who I am today. So I was thankful for it.
You know, man, that might be a mind game. All of them. Like, he said something similar to me and my brother's, they said, listen, if you're ever working at Burger King or McDonald's, I'm going to walk in. I'm not going to say hi to you. I'm going to take my order. I'm going to get my food and walk out. He said it to my brother that at one point, the one that went to the Navy, he was about to go get a job at, I want to say, Subway or Burger King. He thought about that and said, get up from the military. I'm going to the military. I refuse.
I love it.
But the parents have their ways, man.
Yo, 54 points in a community college game. I love your story, man. We're gonna get into this as the interview goes on. But I love your story because you're not supposed to be here, Will.
I'm not.
You know that, right?
I'm not, man. I tell you all the time, man. I'm not supposed to.
How many times do you look back and you say, man, like, do you try to figure out what happened along the way that got you to where you are today, or do you just go back and you just kind of take it as, hey man, this was my destiny, this was my road?
You know, I can say I was always a gym rat. I want to say it didn't always look like it growing up, but I was always a gym rat. And to pick one moment that kind of everything kind of shifted for me, it would be a couple of them, if I had to say. Once in high school, one in college.
Let's go to high school.
Man, I want to say from my freshman year, I moved from Detroit to a school called Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
like 15 minutes outside Detroit. And
that's in another town, right? It's another town, yeah.
So I went out for the basketball team. Obviously, everybody that grew up in Romulus from eighth grade went to Romulus High School.
Right, so they're all boys.
The coaching staff knew the players. Like, everyone was already a tight-knit group. And I barely made it in. I barely made it on the team. But I think the changing point was for my sophomore year, I got kicked off of grades. So it was basically no more basketball, just schoolwork. And I was like, man, I can't afford this again. And junior year, I barely played at all. I barely played.
So you missed the second half of your sophomore year.
Yeah. And then my junior year, I barely touched the floor. Barely.
Well, that's because you're still dealing with 15 guys that they're all boys, and they've all grown up through the system together, and you show up and then you leave them.
Yeah, so it was dealing with that. And then, man, that junior summer, the summer of my junior year, I worked like crazy. I was adding different parts of my game. I was working with a guy named Fillmore Bowles. He was a point guard. He went to school with my father and everything. But it was adding a different dynamic to my game. And I worked with him all summer, and sooner or later, everything kind of just was going step by step further and further. And I had a great senior year. Still no scholarships, but I had a great senior year.
And that's why no scholarship. That's why you ended up at a community college.
One guy came to see me at an open gym. We used to have open gym where coaches just come in, and he came to see me. He offered me a scholarship, and at that point, I was just happy. I didn't really care to where it was or that I was going to the middle of nowhere, Marshalltown, Iowa. Happy to continue playing basketball.
That's how bad a research I did. I didn't even know Marshalltown was in Iowa. I thought it was somewhere in Detroit.
It was in the middle of nowhere, man. Literally middle of nowhere. I was just happy to be there.
How does a kid get from where you were to Iowa and then all of a sudden end up in University of Utah with Coach Jim Boylan, right?
Oh, yeah. Basically, man, just, how can I say this? After my freshman year, it was different. You're playing against grown men now. Coming from high school, playing against a grown man, and it was different. I think that following summer, I spent maybe 2 weeks home. As you know, junior college, you have full summers. You get to have four.
Right.
I was not like the university where they have you up there on campus. I spent 10 days at home, and the rest of the time I spent in Iowa by myself with my junior college coach. And we just worked. That's all we did was work.
What made you work? That's why I try to get that across to people sometimes. What made you know that you didn't belong in a community college and you belong somewhere bigger? A D1 school, for example.
To be honest, I still wasn't thinking about it. I want to say I wasn't disappointed of how my freshman year went, but I knew I could do better. Like I had a taste of it. I could be better. And I ended up getting invited to a top, I guess, top JUCO players for the summertime. And I think that's where it kind of was like, okay, you got a chance. I went there, I played well, and that's when I finally was like, okay, you actually have a chance to go to a university. And it kind of went up from there. Obviously, like you said, the 54-point game, that happened that year. But the streak of that was like 54, 36, 31, 27. And from there, that's when I actually got scholarship offers.
And what was the best offer you had? Did you take the best offer you had, or did you think like, I can go to this one and maybe play a little bit more? Because that's always something that every player has to think about, no matter where they go, no matter when they do it.
The best offer I had was a Big 12 offer from Iowa State, but they didn't offer me. It was like four of the teams that offered me: Wichita, St. Louis, University of Utah, and it was one more. It was Northern Iowa. So all kind of in that lower level, and they offered me before I had the 54 points.
But all those schools were at that time were that Cinderella schools, Wichita State.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Those were teams that were coming along. They weren't a bad team to be on either.
It wasn't, and it was just, I don't know why. I know why I picked Utah, I know why I picked it. It was one of those days where Iowa State offered me after I had 54, and I was 30 minutes down the road from Iowa State. I don't think people realize how close it was. It was 30 minutes down the road, and they never offered me until that happened. I'm literally, they offered my teammate, my roommate, they offered him. They never offered me, so I turned that down.
Was that called stupid pride?
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah. Definitely was. I'm like, there's no way I go there. There's no way.
That's like in high school, that girl checks you out once, like she hears you sing or you have a good game. It's like, nah. You didn't like me beforehand, but
that was pretty much it. I'm like, whatever. Utah. It was just I don't know if you know. Do you know Nate Oates?
Nate Oates. It sounds familiar.
He's the coach at University of Alabama right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my high school coach. Shout out to him, man. Unbelievable, man. And he's like probably one of the top five guys that I've ever had a counter meeting that would like literally treat you like family. So yeah, he was he came to my visit with me to University of Utah, and basically he told me that I'm trusted in him. Basically, he told me that it was a good fit, I could do well here, and I just kind of went from there. But at the same time, I would just happy to be there.
I mean, now you're D1. I mean, that's you're playing a big school D1. I played a little school D1. It was like we didn't feel that important, you know. When you saw 350 D1 teams and you're down at the 330 mark, but Utah was a good team back then, and Jim Boylan's one of the best coaches around.
Great guy, man. At that time, man, like once I made it there, you couldn't tell me anything. I was just taking every step that I made. I'm like, hey, this is as far as I thought I was going to go. Well, this is just another step. And that's how I felt. That's how I was approaching every situation. Like, I had nothing to lose. Like, this is already, I'm already beating the odds.
Then what makes you, other than your coach getting fired, what makes you leave from Utah and then go back to Iowa State now? You went back to that girl that wasn't checking you out, that she decided to check you out. And I want people to understand this too, the people that don't understand the college rules. They're not like that anymore, obviously, because of the transfer portal. But in the States, when you transferred from one school to another, you had to sit out an entire year. You sat out an entire year without playing, man. And that was between your junior and senior year also. So you kind of took that momentum that you've had of this growth spurt, that you're not physical growth spurt, but emotional growth spurt. Why make that decision?
I didn't think that Utah was going to take a step forward. I thought that I had played great that year, and like I said, we were losing. So I'm like, I need to play somewhere where I have a chance. And now they fired their coach at Iowa State, brought in Fred Hoiberg. So it was a different situation. They had brought some transfers in. So I'm like, okay, this can be a good team. And my brother was actually going to go to the school in Marshalltown, the same school that the junior college I went to. I wanted to go to Gonzaga originally. That's where I wanted to go.
That's big time now.
Yeah, I wanted to go to Gonzaga. And then when he told me he was going to go there, I'm like, forget it. I go to Iowa State, and we 30 minutes down the road. You can come to the games. I can come to yours. And that's kind of how that all worked out right there. I want to say he was the reason I kind of went back to Iowa State.
Was there any time during this college time where you started like really thinking about being drafted? And like, when was the first time, let's say, that it popped into your head? Because for me, when I was in college, I never thought I'd get drafted. I was like, all right, I know some people whose brothers played in Europe, but I heard all the stories. I was like, man, I don't know, man. I just want to go play. I don't care. I was kind of escaping reality of like, after 4 years of school, I need to go get a job somewhere. You know what I mean? But what was the day you're like, man, I might get drafted?
You know what? I thought I had a chance when I was playing at Utah. I was playing against guys like Jim Fredette, Kawhi Leonard, and I was holding my own. I was doing well. And I'm like, if these guys are top of the draft boards, I feel like
right.
I really have a chance if I get on a winning situation. Because obviously it's a lot better when you're winning and then playing well. So I think that was when kind of it opened my eyes a little bit that I might have a chance. But when I got to Iowa State, it was that's when I was like, okay. When I seen my name on a couple of draft boards, all you need is just one. Your name on one. And after that, you start believing a little bit. Before the end, man, I'm not going to lie to you, man. I never heard of Europe. I've heard of China. But, like, Europe,
I love it.
Basketball, it was, I guess you can say I was ignorant to it. I had no idea. I had no idea what the EuroLeague was. I didn't know what the EuroLeague was until my third year overseas, believe it or not. Third year overseas, my first game I ever watched was the Final Four between Baskonia was there. Baskonia was at the Final Four. Cheska beat Fenerbahce for the championship. I don't know who it was in.
Oh, that was in Berlin. That was in Berlin. That was with the when Teodosic missed that shot at the end. Teodosic missed that shot at the end, and Carapa tipped it in. Had that crazy tag. That was I think my first Final Four game announcing for EuroLeague.
That was my first time. I watched the Baskonia versus, I don't know who they played, but that was my first time watching EuroLeague.
It's crazy because you and I have so many similarities in that way, man. Because I came over here and I started playing in Malaga first. And you know, when my agent, I knew what Europe was, right? Because I had a roommate of mine whose brother played in Ireland. He played and coached in Ireland. And back then, he's like, yeah, man, my brother makes $100,000 a year. I was like, damn, man, $100,000 a year. Like, if I could do that for 10 years, that's $1 million, right? So when I came over here, we started playing. And I was just in one of those, you know, I was in Malaga. We were just playing weekly games. And we had a good season. And then all of a sudden, the following year, we started playing in this other European tournament. We started traveling over Europe. But I didn't know where the hell I was, dude. I was like, when my agent called me up, he's like, I might have a job for you in Spain. I'm like, cool, man. Where's that? So after you don't get drafted, I mean, was it a big disappointment for you? Did it become such a reality that it was a disappointment? Or was he like, all right, I kind of expected this and I got to move from here?
You know, I thought I had a chance. I thought I had a chance all the way to like the 52nd pick. When one team didn't have any more picks left, I'm like, okay, this is it. But at the same time, I didn't watch the draft. It was the time where I never got to see my youngest brother play high school, and they were having summer league. So I was at the gym basically the whole night. I'm like, if I get drafted, I get drafted. If I don't, oh well. It definitely hurt a little bit because I thought, like I said, I was going to have a chance. But at the same time, I had already beat the odds. So it really didn't, like I said, destroy me. I was just like, okay, I made it pretty far anyway.
Yeah, but there's a point where you never want to stop that progression either. You know what I mean? Because I'm going to kind of put myself in your situation because I went through the same things. Like every step back when you weren't one of the most touted players or you didn't have all this press or whatever. Every little setback is a huge setback. It's not like, okay, well, don't worry. I'm just going to go work a little bit harder. I'm going to make it. You know what I mean? Or I'm going to get my name out there because your name's not really out there.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I'm just like, something's going to happen. It's been happening all my life. Something always happens, and I'm just going to wait. And sooner or later, I got the phone call about Summer League. And obviously, you know how Summer League goes. Either you're going to play a lot or right. Play it all. And that year, they had drafted Ray McCollum at the point guard and Ben McLemore. So minutes are getting real shaky in that area. So
that was the Kings.
Yeah, the Kings. Yeah,
that was my in and out of NBA experience. I made Sacramento and I played until that December 15th deadline. I was like, all right, get him out of here.
Yeah, man. So that was it, man. I hate Summer League now to this day. But I guess it all depends on the situation. But at the same time, I didn't get down about it. My agent was pretty optimistic about everything. He told me about the team in Germany. So at the same time, I was always kind of calm about the whole situation. Not going therapy, but calm.
You kind of segued me into the next question a little bit earlier. It's like, when your agent calls you up and says something about Germany, you're like, well, what, I mean, you've already gone from Detroit to Iowa, so that's kind of a cultural shock also in itself. And then to Utah, which is another cultural shock. So going to Germany is, what are you thinking, man? What do you think about, like, man, is, because when I thought about it, I was like, my first trip was to Italy, and I was flying on that big jet, man, that big bird going over the ocean. I'm just like, what the hell am I getting myself into? Where am I going?
You know what? I still remember where I was when I got the phone call. I was laying on the couch in my mom's apartment, and he told me about it. He told me how much money it was.
Well, what? How much was it? Come on, tell us.
Man, it was $90,000 for the first year, and then $110,000 for the second year.
That, I mean, that's money. That's money now, right?
In my eyes, I'm like, man, I'm rich. Like, I'm rich. And I get to go play basketball.
Until you buy that first Corvette or you know, that first car you want.
This is like, I'm like, okay, I made it. It was a culture shock when I got there, but easily the best place I could have started my career.
Why is that?
I want to say just the living wise, it wasn't like a really hard adjustment. Everyone spoke English. Obviously, if you're really, really old, you probably didn't speak English, but everyone spoke English, so it was a really like easy adjustment for me. I had no issues. The only issue I probably had was driving manual. That could have made me go home.
There's so many American stories out here in Europe back in the day about guys not being able to drive the stick shift.
I had no idea. I used to see my father drive, and I'm like, I don't know what this. He never taught me. I'm like, I don't know what this is.
So you were taught on an automatic transmission, obviously.
Yeah, and I got there, man. I left my car. I remember leaving my car at the gym for maybe 2 weeks, and I didn't drive. I tried to make the practice from home, and the rear light probably changed 3 times, and I never moved from the spot. I couldn't move. I just put my hood up, kept trying. And after that, I never drove for like 2 weeks.
Oh, man. Well, welcome to Europe, man. It's because of the English, it's got to make it a little bit easier than going to a country. I mean, but nowadays, man, y'all are so lucky, man. Everybody speaks English everywhere. I mean, back when I played, it was like you either learned it or you didn't. You know, you either learned the language or you just left out.
It was definitely an easy adjustment, like, living wise. It wasn't that bad, man. I enjoyed it.
After all that, you went back to another summer league, even though you said you didn't like it and the experience was bad. You went back to the Clippers summer league. But you played. At least you played there.
I played a little bit still. Nothing against anybody, man, but I still feel like the guys that are playing in front of me aren't playing better than me now. Or aren't on the level that I am now. So it's kind of disappointing to see that now that these guys that they thought they were better than me, they're not even close. But I guess that's life. People have different perspectives of you, and I guess you thrive in different environments. So who knows how that goes.
It sounds like that's a thorn in your side a little bit. Like, but you decided to take a different path, which isn't bad either.
I'm just walking the path. Obviously, once I bought into it, I want to say I didn't truly buy into it until me and my agent. He came to visit me in Germany one day, and we're in the cab. He probably still remembers this conversation. We're in a taxi, and he was talking about some of his players. He didn't give names, but he was like, "Yeah, my big guy's working on a deal right now." I said, "Man, how much?" He's a vet. He said, "Yeah." So how much is this guy usually making? He said, I think he's making $1.2 million. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't even realize that type of money was being made in Europe. I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah. And from there, that's when I'm like, okay, let's buy into this. Let's really try to give it everything, because it's out there. You just got to go get it now.
The same attitude that you had in the States, or looking back in the States, is the same attitude I'm sure you've had here too, where you've seen, as you're going through, you know, we'll get into Jerusalem, we'll get into Israel now, and then of course, you know, Turkey, Dar es Salaam, but I mean, you had to be seeing players that were playing, and now if you ask your agent once, I know you asked them more than once, like, hey, how much is that guy making? How much is that guy making? But that shit motivates you, doesn't it?
It does. For sure. No, I don't really pay attention. And okay, Germany, I probably paid attention to one guy. He was making a lot of money. But I was playing all the minutes. I didn't understand it. But I think when I got the Cheska, that's when it was like a real eye opener, probably. You know, I try to stay out of people's business, so I didn't really want to know.
You can't stay out of anybody's business.
And
forget that.
It was like brought to my attention, and I couldn't believe it. So I'm like, ain't no way. Ain't no way this is going on. So, but that's life, man. Everybody's not on the even playing ground right away. Kind of like everybody has to work for it. And obviously in a different situation than these newcomers that are coming in. So, yeah, that's how kind of how it goes.
Before we jump to Cheska, let's go to Israel and how you got, like, you said that the first game that you saw was the Baskonia game of Final Four, then you saw the finals that year. At that point, is that when you're like, man, I could play against these players, and you went to Israel, and from Israel, you got to Derosh Afaka?
You know, I used to hear the guys talk about EuroLeague all the time in the locker room, and I still had no idea what they were talking about when I was in Israel. So I'm just, I heard playing, I'm like, okay, I know it's different levels to Europe, but I still didn't think nothing else of it. And when I watched EuroLeague, at the same time, I still didn't think anything of it, and I still had hopes to get into the NBA still. So it was never I need to play EuroLeague. EuroLeague didn't come into the picture until I never even thought about playing EuroLeague. I was just trying to make as much money as I possibly could. That was kind of my logic then.
That's a big thing for you. You know, this career is going to end sooner or later. Yeah. So you got to bank.
Yeah, I was just enjoying playing basketball in Israel, and that was kind of my thing.
I'll get into your wife and your kids a little bit at the end, the personal part of this, but at what part of this story does your wife come into play? I mean, was she traveling with you to Europe? How long have you guys been together?
We met in college. She's been living.
Wait. You met in college. Which one?
Iowa State.
All right. So that was your senior year.
Yeah. So she's been with me since my second year in Germany.
She came over to Germany to live with you over there?
Second year. Yeah.
Did she throw that? If I'm going to Germany to live with you, I need a ring on this finger?
No, man. I took that step on my own. She didn't give me no ultimatum. That step on my own. Well, yeah, man, that was like since my second year in Germany, man, she's been with me. She's been riding since then. The good and the bad.
It's a tough ride for them, man, I'm telling you.
She's seen me at my worst when it came to this basketball. I used to hate the off season. The off season used to be so stressful, man.
But why is that? That's a time to work on your game, though. I used to love the offseason, man. That was my favorite part of the year.
It was the part of not having a job.
Well, yeah. That's true. If you don't have, a lot of my offseasons, I already had a contract for the next season. So I wasn't.
After Israel was probably my most, well, one year I didn't sign until like September, I want to say.
Really? That starts to get in your head a little bit, doesn't it?
September, like 7th or 8th.
How many times a day were you calling your agent?
Oh, I was close to breaking ties. I was real close there to just saying, okay, I need to find other representation. But I stuck with it. They stuck with me. Yeah, everything happens for a reason.
When you get the Derosh Afaka, you got David Black coaching you, who I think is, to me, a god. And, you know, I've watched him coach. When I used to do these crossover interviews in person, I've even done it, you know, in the stadium. I went to Olympiacos when he was coaching Olympiacos, man. There comes a time when you retire where you're like, man, I never want to play this game again. And there's other times where you sit down and you watch a coach like him, and knowing that it's going through your head is, man, I'd love to come back and play for a guy like him. What was it like playing for David?
David was great. Obviously, I told you my approach. Once I get some places, I'm like, hey, I made it pretty far. Like, I'm just happy to be here. I beat the odds. And he was the first guy that told me, don't see it that way. Don't look at it that way. I brought you here for a reason. I brought you here to help this team. I think you can help this team. Because at the time, they had nothing but NBA guys or EuroLeague vets. So I'm like, I'm just here because somebody backed out and I got lucky. But I think we had that conversation. He kept his word. I was a part of the team. I was a big part of the team, and he gave me freedom to really play my game. He gave me an opportunity.
You were recommended to him by a friend of his, right? Dan Shamir?
Dan Shamir, Milan's assistant, yeah.
He's assistant in Milan now.
Assistant in Milan, yeah.
But what was he doing then? How did he find you?
He was my head coach at Alome.
Oh, he was a head coach at Alome. Okay.
Yeah, it was another one of those summers where I wasn't picking up the traction I thought I would after the season I had. He called me just randomly just to check up on me. He was like, man, you got a job yet? I said, no. I was like, you serious? I said, no. He's like, okay, I'll call you back. And next thing you know, David Blatt's number is popping up on my phone.
But did you know who David Blatt was at that time?
No. I knew he was Cleveland's coach.
Yeah, but that was later, wasn't it?
That's the only thing I knew about David Blatt. He was at Cleveland before he went to George Falcon.
Okay. All right, my bad.
So I see the number pop up. I answer. I talk to him. And he was like, yeah, I want you to come, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. It was that simple. So I thank both of them just for being friends in general. Because I don't know how that happened so perfectly. It just fell. It just fell through perfect.
When I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm loving it because I feel like there's a connection between us. Because I'm 57 and I look back, I still don't know how I made it where I did. I still can't figure out when. I mean, I know there's a couple points in my life when it happened.
It's so many, you can't really pinpoint the exact. So who knows if Dan's not my coach, who knows if I get to EuroLeague? Who knows if I just bounce around in Euro Cup or Champions League or whatever it was, and who knows what happened?
I mean, if you bounce around there, you know you're eventually going to get there. Your talent's going to show through at one point or another.
Yeah, hope that happened, but yeah, it doesn't always go that way.
You say he kind of gave you freedom. Coach Blatt gave you freedom to play your game. And when's the confidence come in? That's the thing, because there's so many players that are confident that they're good players, but they're not confident that because they're not playing. You know what I'm trying to get at? You're like, when was that moment for you where you were just like, man, I know I can do this fine. You didn't say, I think I can do it. I think I could be better than him. You said, I know I could be better than him.
I want to just say that I didn't really care who you were. I didn't really care if you were in a EuroLeague for this amount of years. I didn't care if you were a vet. I'm approaching it the same way I'm approaching anything else. It's me and you. I'm going to try to be the better person because I have nothing to lose.
You didn't get more motivated by knowing that you were playing against somebody that was supposedly better than you.
No, I'm just like, there's no way you had to work harder than me to get here. There's no way. That's kind of my approach growing up. Like, even coming into EuroLeague, there's no way you work harder than me to get here. And it's no way. And I didn't think anybody was better than me. It was probably one guy that I thought that he actually was better than me.
Who is it? Come on.
A guy named Bracy Wright.
Where's he from?
I don't know where he's from, man. I know he went to school at University of Indiana, and he was at Jerusalem. And he showed me that he was better than me, okay? And that was probably the one guy where I'm like, okay, this guy is different.
Did you play against him more than once?
Twice.
And he showed you both times he was better than you.
Both times he was just a better player than me.
Even the second time we already knew.
Both times. This was like my second year out. And I'm like, okay, this guy is really good. But when I got to EuroLeague, I approached everything the same. I'm like, I'm trying to get whatever you have. Whoever the player was, I'm trying to get whatever you have. I'm trying to be the best guy out here. I always said, I wanted to be the best three man overseas. Like I said, when I finally locked in and said, I'm going to play overseas. And that was the goal.
From there to South, I mean, you play EuroLeague, but it was kind of one of those EuroLeagues that you know you might not be playing in EuroLeague the following year. You know what I mean? Because you just never know. So you got to be looking for your future also. You end up with Dimitris, you do this. And how do you get to Cesca, man? Because, look, when I saw you play – When I commentated games and I saw you play against Madrid, I'm gonna be really honest with you. I'm blatantly honest and sometimes too transparent. I'm like, damn, this dude can play, man. I said, if only he could shoot. I said, if he could shoot the three, he'd be deadly. And because against Real Madrid, they played you like that. I remember because I was commentating the game, man. And I know Pablo Laso because I played against Pablo Laso, and you know where that came from, right? Because Pablo couldn't shoot. Pablo couldn't put the ball in the water from a boat. And teams used to play him like that. Teams would just like sit his man back, you know, because he was a good point guard and dish the ball well, but they would give him all that space and like, go ahead, shoot it. Go ahead. And that messes with you mentally too.
That game right there was an eye-opener for me.
Because they were letting you shoot?
Because they were letting me shoot. They didn't do that all year into the playoffs. And it worked. Once you catch the ball, you turn it around, and you see nobody in front of you. Right away, you already hesitate. You're like, why is nobody in front of me? And from there, it was just trickling down. And once you miss a couple of them, coach takes you out, then you're going farther down.
I don't think anybody, unless you've played the game before, understands how much of a mental issue that is. And that carries with you for a while. That's just not like at the end of the game, you go look at the stats like, oh, I had a bad game. That messes with your head a little bit.
It messed me up a while. I think my dad suffered more than anybody. Because I had him at the gym nonstop.
Oh, really?
Nonstop. Like, he had to stay there. And I had to make a 10 in a row from three before I could leave the gym. So it was some spots where I would be there forever. And he had to keep rebounding. But we were not leaving that gym until it was done.
How old is your dad?
Oh, man. I don't even know, man. Yeah, I don't think he's 60 yet.
So he was in all right shape still to be able to.
In solid shape. But yeah, he was tired for sure. He was definitely tired at the works.
But you did this all in one summer because all of a sudden out of nowhere, when you got the Cheska, your game changed. People continued to play you the way Madrid played you, but your game changed because you started to drop that three. What happened was you started to drop the three, but then they started becoming more contested threes because people weren't giving you the look anymore. The minute you make that first or that second one. But what I liked about your game more than anything, since I'm an old school player, I like the way you're still able to, and you became able to not only get to the basket, you were able to stop too, like, you know, come off the dribble, fake that three, stop, and then hit the little, you know, the 15-footer, the 18-footer. I think that's what changed your game more than anything, in my opinion.
And you know what, man? I love David Blatt. I love him. And, you know, he didn't help my confidence sometimes because when I make these threes, he did like, come on, sit down. But with the tutors, and I got the tutors, no matter if I missed or made that three, if it was the correct shot, so that right there was all the, like, the confidence that I needed to, like, continue shooting the ball. And obviously, at the practice, you're not going to find a lot of head coaches that at the practice, they're under that rim rebounder. They're not going to their office and going home. They're under that rim rebounding with the assistant coaches. The assistant coaches were usually the last ones to leave. But it was days, 2-3 days out of the week, where the coach is right there with him under the rim rebounding, passing the ball.
You didn't have my boy D. Middleton, though.
He was definitely down there. That right there, man, when you got the coaches that, like I said, want to see you do well as well, and they know that if you put the time in, use the good things to happen, and they're not running home to get home and do whatever they're going to do at home. They're still in the gym rebounding for you. So that goes a long way.
At this time when you signed with Cesca, now you know what EuroLeague's about.
Yeah.
And you went from Darüşşafaka, who, like I said, might not be in EuroLeague next year, to a team that's going to always be in EuroLeague, number one. And not only that, they always want to win. And they don't want to win the league. They want to win the Final Four. Winning the league doesn't mean anything to anybody like that up there.
When I got there, they say, listen, it's all about – the players are telling me it's all about winning, okay? This jersey, y'all, it comes with pressure. It comes with pressure. No loss is acceptable. None. And when you get there, you realize that no loss, no matter how good the team is, no matter how you play, no loss is acceptable, Cheska.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's a different you don't feel that pressure, obviously, when you're out there playing, but it's during the week, you know what I mean? After you lose a game or you're coming up on a big game, and that's when you start to feel that pressure. But when you're playing, you don't really feel it. Until you lose that game, you're like, oh, shit, man, they're going to kill me.
It was days where I felt like we had a talented team, but it was days where I feel like someday we were just playing not to lose, not to have the repercussions of losing the game. So I feel like sometimes that was driving us more than winning the game was.
To not lose and not have to deal with all the BS outside of it.
Exactly.
What was it like to be under that pressure, though? Because, I mean, you guys have a squad. You guys had a complete squad. You guys were stacked, so to speak. You know, when I played, when we were back in the day, there was two Americans on the team, and all the rest were Spanish guys. So most of it was on the American guys. But now, like as a whole team, you guys don't play as much as the old days. You know, you guys play your 20, 22 minutes, 23 minutes, which is awesome because you guys could play a lot longer. But you still feel that much responsibility? Like, let's say if a game you lost, you only played like 16 minutes because the matchups weren't right. You still feel that responsibility?
Yes, yes. Because, I don't know, people that play for Tudis and Obradovich and Sadis, you're going to understand what I'm saying. If you lose a game, you're going to watch from jump ball to the last second of that game. So in that 16 minutes, you could have made 4 or 5 mistakes. So it doesn't matter how many minutes you play. You're going to see the reason you only play this amount of minutes. You're going to see every clip. So it's always, they're always holding you accountable for every mistake you have. So it's no escaping. There's no, well, maybe I get away with this. You're going to see it and you're going to be held accountable for it.
Man, nowadays it's got to be tough too because it's so easy to like cut and edit these things. Like back in my day, you had the VCR tapes, you know what I mean? And like I played with Selko for 3 years. So, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. Those video sessions were nightmares, man. It was like you just wanted to go. It's like I told you, my dad, like, don't talk to me. Just hit me.
Just let me go run down and backs and let me go home.
Your first career title was there, right? Was the VTB league.
Man, that was my first title for who knows how long.
What was that like? I mean,
it was cool, but I still felt like something was missing. It didn't feel like
it wasn't the pinnacle.
Yeah, even though like I never experienced the EuroLeague, like it still didn't feel right. Okay, I won, but something it still felt like it was a down season. I didn't realize how it's supposed to feel until the next year.
But that season, it's a down. But you won the VTB after the Final Four, obviously, and you guys ended up fourth in that in 2018. And you, again, you lost to Real Madrid, right, in the semifinals.
Yep.
So that couldn't make you feel much better either, because that was an interesting game because I felt like you guys were the better team.
We were the better team, man. You know, I don't want to make excuses, man, but like Kyle had just came back from a tear in his calf. Nando had came back from a tear. So I feel like everything was, we put those guys right out there with no games or nothing. But yeah, they were just a better team that day. They had all the momentum. They turned it up right at the perfect time of the year. And they were just a better team that day, easily.
That's the good and the bad of the Final Four.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what makes the Final Four EuroLeague so damn enticing and so great to watch, because it's, you got to be in your best day for 2 days straight. Otherwise, someone's going to take it from you. And the following year, 2018-19, you were kind of in good form, weren't you?
We're definitely in good form. From when we played Baskonia, I think everything just carried on from there, man. Everybody was in great form. And
you guys lost that first game of that playoff. Didn't you? Was it the first game or the second game?
We won the first game and lost the second one.
Because I know you lost the home game. Because I did the games in Baskonia, and I remember the atmosphere was incredible that first night. It was hilarious because when you guys won the third game, the fourth game was like, all right, well, which one of these teams is going to be playing the Final Four in the same building in just a matter of a month, you know? And that was I think that was the key for you guys' victory, because you guys didn't dominate that season. It wasn't your best, like, regular season.
We might have finished second to Fenerbahce, I think, that year.
Yeah, but it was an irregular season.
The other season that we had.
Right, right. It wasn't as dominant. But when you got that win against Baskonia, you got to the Final Four after your experience the year before. What did you take with you into that Final Four? What did you learn? What did you try to do better? Is there anything conscious that you remember?
To be honest, no.
You're just one of those guys that just said, man, every day's the same day. It's like Groundhog Day, man. Just go out and play my game, and whatever happens, happens.
I always use the phrase 1-0, one game at a time. I didn't have any other approach. I remember me and Atutis talked about the game the year before, and he was just talking about some of the decisions I made, but at the same time, that game was in the wind. So I think in all, we were just together. Like, everybody knew what we were fighting for, and I think that was the biggest thing. Nobody wanted to have a repeat of that next season, of that last season. So, obviously, it's one game, man. You know what you're fighting for, so you're going to go out there and give it all you got.
The Real Madrid game was a semifinal game, and that was an interesting game because y'all were losing. Y'all were getting beat. Y'all were getting beat up bad for three quarters. And Coach just kind of changed everything, man. He put you guys in a smaller lineup. And he changed the whole, you know, I talked to Etudis after the game. I got to question him. I think I just walked up to him. I don't think I was on the mic. I was like, Coach, man, I said, I've been watching you for years, and that was the best game I've ever seen a coach. Because he coached you guys out of a devastating loss. I felt, anyways, from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I want to say he put his best scorers out there. Obviously, he has his dog in Danny. And we just went out there and just run and gun. Obviously, you got me, Daniel, and Corey on the wings. Where I was at the four at that time. So he put three of us out there and just, hey,
right. Let's
go make plays. And obviously, it was a defensive lineup as well. You got me, Danny, Corey, Othello, Kyle, me. So it was... You know, I can't really even describe it, man. I think everybody was just hungry out there. Everybody knew what we was fighting for, man. It's to put myself in everybody else's shoes, it'd be tough.
What he did was he totally changed the rhythm of the game because they were beating you guys up from different areas. And as soon as he went small, at least I remember this comment, as soon as he went small, Real Madrid came out of their offense. They started, like, taking more time off the shot clock, trying to get the ball inside of the mismatches, and that just took them totally out of the rhythm of their offense.
Switching everything. And
right, exactly.
It's your people struggle with switching more than anything now. I don't know why.
It's the worst. It's always been like that, man. Even when I played, it's like every time you switch, it just throws you out of a rhythm of the game because you never set up for that. You know what I mean? You never play that way. And when it comes out of nowhere, you don't really have a set play. All of a sudden, like, all right, there's a point guard switched on Will. Let's get Will down low and post them up. It takes too long to happen.
There's no right way. So that definitely helped us when we went to that switching defense.
You went down with an ankle injury. Was it at the end of the game?
It was literally like the last 3 seconds of the game.
And it was like, uh-oh. It was like that. Oh, no.
Yeah, I ended up having to get surgery after that summer for the ankle.
What'd you do to play on it the next night? That's the question. I'm sure you rehabbed.
Rehab didn't help.
Yeah, but you got, not rehab, but I mean, you got to keep that foot moving as much as you can, man.
Took a painkiller in the butt, and that was probably it. That's the only thing that it got me through. You know, it didn't even get me through. It worked in warm-ups. I went to test it out to make sure I was good, and I jumped, and oh, man, it came just flying back at me. Everything was, all the pain just came all at once, and I said, okay, this is not going to be well. It's not going to go well for me.
So what's going through your mind, man? Championship game, y'all made the finals after you know, finishing fourth place the year before, and the last 20, 30 seconds of the game, you twist your ankle. You're like, man, I'm not sitting this game out. There ain't no way. But there's always the fact in the back of your mind, or maybe the coach's mind, that you're not helping your team because you're not 100% either.
You can ask him to this day. He didn't care. We got on the same elevator at one point. He's like, I need you out there. Plain and simple. We can do whatever we can to stop the pain, but I need you out there. So he didn't really care that I was hurt. He's like, one game, let's go.
You know that's nowadays that's NFL. He'll be kicked out.
He's like, hey, let's go. We got one game, and yeah, I'm just still to this day. I'm lucky that F has never decided to attack me off the dribble, because for sure I couldn't play again. If they would have decided to
just take you one on one isolation,
bring me to set the pick on Shane and have me out there on Shane, done. Bring me to Boston, done. It didn't matter. Done. I had Adrian, so he doesn't dribble the ball. He just crashed the boards. I could do that.
Right, you can box him out.
Yeah, but if I had to move, no way.
You know, after all we've talked about, Detroit, Marshalltown Community College, the fact that there's no way you're supposed to be here. You know as well as I do, like, now you think I'm supposed to be here, but for many years of your life, you're like, man, what the hell am I doing here? Where'd I come from? Dude, you won the EuroLeague Final Four MVP and the championship in the same year. I mean, come on, dude. You're such a humble guy, but I don't know how you guys play basketball anymore. Y'all too humble for me, man. We used to be assholes back in the day. You know what I mean? I don't know if they're going to bleep that out or not, but y'all so humble. You won a EuroLeague Final Four MVP and a championship when you came from a JUCO college. Tell me about that. Tell me about the journey. Tell me about the history. It's crazy.
It is. I'm going to go back to saying it again, man. I took every step that I took, I was just grateful to be here. Just grateful. And it still doesn't change. Every time an accomplishment happens in my life, I'm just grateful, just because I don't think I was supposed to be here. Anything good happens, I'm just like, I got lucky. And I tell me and my father joke about this all the time, man. He understands exactly what I mean. Like, I got lucky. This is not supposed to be me.
You have to look at it within that whole realm of things. I mean, you have to be good to be lucky.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, if you're not a good player, you're not getting lucky. I mean, you know, those shots you see from half court, three-quarter court, they're lucky shots. But the shots that you've practiced, you haven't practiced them, but you do them all the time. So when you take that, it's not a lucky shot, so to speak. It's lucky that it went in, but you put the work in.
The work is key. The work was always put in, but you never know if it's going to pay off or not. Obviously, there's a lot of people that work extremely hard, and sometimes it doesn't work out for them, and all you can do is basically work.
That's always been my big thing with coaches and players. Like, man, I just kind of working as hard as I can. I think I talked to Sardis one time or Zelko. I don't know who it was. And Zelko told me, you know, when Zelko came here and started coaching us in Madrid, I was one of the top four players, if not the top four player in the league. And he's just like, that's not enough. It's not enough. He's like, I'm going to make you a better player. And I was like, man, you're going to make me a better player. I made myself this player, you know? And dude, he took me to a whole nother level. He made me believe that I could have been a better player. And I think that's what Coach Blatt and Coach Atudis did a little bit for you, even though, like you said, he took some of your confidence away at times, but that's a way of giving you confidence also.
Sure. It was a lot of things he did, man. But like I said, both of them had their ways, their different methods. And obviously, both of them are great coaches, and both of them had success in different ways. So obviously, they're doing something right.
You had a chance after that to go back to the NBA for a year, right? You had a year deal?
Yeah, I want to say OKC was offering me the minimum.
Minimum was what then?
I don't even care. I don't even know what it was. I don't care.
You didn't even ask.
I didn't care. But Chesko was offering me 3 years guaranteed. I'm like, there's no way. And like I said, it's crazy how everything works out, because I have an ankle surgery that summer, and then 2 to 3 months later, I tear my ACL. So if I'm on a minimum and I'm done, that's it. Whatever it is, for sure they get me out of there, and what now?
I mean, I remember texting you, man, but when I saw the tweet, you know, that I think you went down and you sent out a tweet to to all your people and everything else about, I'll be back, I'll be better, blah, blah, blah. So man, I looked up, I'm like, God, of all the damn players, man, no, it can't be Will. What was that like, man? What was that going through that injury like? Because this is your first real injury, because your ankle injury was a real injury. You had to get surgery on it, but you still played through it. This is your first time where you're out. I mean, you're out because it happened, 2 months into the season?
Yeah, fourth game.
I
know so many emotions, man. It was tough. Obviously, I knew something was wrong.
Right.
They wanted to tell me that it was. But if you look at the video, the mechanics of it and everything, they're like, yeah, it's probably ACL, but no one was sure. And I remember getting back home, went to do an MRI. And I still remember once they told me, I didn't cry. I didn't do anything. I went home. I walked into my apartment. The bathroom was right to the left when I walked in. The kids are in the living room. Wife is in the living room. I just closed the door and locked it. It just let it all out. Like, I couldn't believe that this was happening to me after the fall of the year I just had. Like, this is my big moment with Nando left, Corey left, Tacho left. Like, this.
It's my team now.
This is my team. And this happens. And I'm just, it crushed me. It crushed me. But after that, I was okay. After that, I walked out that bathroom. My kids had a Halloween party. My wife's like, you don't have to go. I put on my 10-man hat and I walked out the door, went to the Halloween party. And that was it. It was in the past.
It's amazing how, like, mentally you have the capability of just, like, just forgetting everything in a way and just making sure that today's a new day. Like, we used to have a saying that you're only as good as your last game, which is a great way to approach things. But you seem as though you have a way to approach things where you just like, all right, it's over. You know, whether it's a good game or a bad game, it's over.
There's nothing you can really do about it, man. You got to get on to the next day. That's with life, not just with basketball. That's with just life in general. And I always like to have that approach. You can't dwell on things too long because it's not going to do anything for you.
That's a great way to approach things. Some people would say it's not because you're not learning from the past experience, but I think you are. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people would wish to be like that because a lot of athletes get stuck in what they've done wrong. You know what I mean?
I use my time to reflect a lot when I'm driving home, especially at the losses, at the games, bad practice. Like, that drive home is kind of where I reflect and kind of think about those things that was wrong and what I did right and whatnot. But when I walk through that door and my family, my kids there, that life is gone. That basketball is cut because now I have a new responsibility when I walk in this house and they have nothing to do with that basketball stuff. So
yeah, but you mentioned before your wife's seen the good and the bad. So
I say good and the bad, I mean like those days where I'm sitting there by the phone, like stressing because I have a phone call and I have a long word. It's getting closer and closer and I haven't got a job yet. Those were days where it's like,
because you're trying to put food on the table for those kids.
Those are bad days. I haven't had one of those in a long time. I've been signed pretty early. So,
hey, knock on wood, bro. Knock on wood. I believe in knocking on some wood. I did it for you. Dude, and now you get up and leave after you lost another Final Four, which never is a happy thing. You get up and you leave, man. You come to where you are now in Ephes.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the logic of going there, and I understand the team that they've built and everything they've built there. But what makes you want to go there with all these other stars again? You know what I mean? I mean, where you can go somewhere else and maybe shine a little bit more. And now, again, back-to-back titles is not an easy thing to do. Back-to-back-to-back is a little bit more difficult, if you know where I'm going with this.
You know, man, when the opportunity came for me to leave, we talked to a couple teams, and they were the most serious that wanted to get it done right away as fast as possible. I had a chance to go play with Mike James again at one point in time. It just didn't work out. Fenerbahce, obviously, Atudis going there. I definitely had that option of going there. But Ephes is one that just wanted to get it done as fast as possible. And obviously, man, you get the opportunity to go there and play with great players. Great players with a system that gives you the type of freedom that I'm used to playing with. You can't go from, go from a tutor system where you have freedom to make plays and think the game on your own to a system is not an easy adjustment. So that's kind of where I put that focus at. Just going there, when we talked to coach how he was going to use me, he was like, hey, same way we did it with the way he played at Cheska, no different. And it was one of those things right there.
When I heard the signing, man, I was like, nah, this is something. No, I looked at the, I said, no, that ain't right. I said, that ain't right. And I said, what? Everybody else must have left, right? And I couldn't figure it out because as soon as the Final Four is done, I kind of disconnect for a little bit. Because you signed pretty quickly. From what I understand and what I've read, it was actually done during the Final Four.
Everybody has a different logic of where it was done at, man.
Well, you're on the crossover, man. Tell, when did you sign with FS?
My birthday.
Which is?
The 17th.
Of?
May.
17th of May.
Yeah.
All right. So it was before the Final Four then?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. 17th Final Four.
Damn, how'd everybody keep that a secret, man?
Everybody had a good job, man. We had a good team keeping there. I don't know who leaked that during the Final Four, like right after they won. That put a lot of uncomfortable situations on me. We don't have to get into that, but yeah, it was, I don't know who did that, but yeah. On my birthday. It's a birthday present.
Let's get this thing over with. First, I want to talk about, I checked out your Instagram, and you talked about, you know, proposing to your wife and so on, man. You did it in a bowling alley?
And in a bowling alley.
Man, I've heard of so many good stories. And when I saw that, I was like, my man's going to tell me he did it in a bowling alley. I can't believe it.
Yeah, second year, man. It was a team been in a bowling alley, team event.
The whole team was there.
But yeah, whole team was there. Yeah. Oof. That was nervous day. Nervous. Still remember my leg shaking. Leg was real shaky that day.
You look good getting down on that one knee, though.
Hey, never again, man. Knees damaged forever, man.
You look like such a family man between, you know, but we all look great in Instagram and everything else. But I know as a father of three young kids playing basketball, traveling, it's not all what it looks like on Instagram. But, damn, you got three unbelievably beautiful children.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. It's cool, man. Obviously, they're in school from... Depending on my schedule, usually I don't see them in the morning time. Unless I'm having to travel to the airport, then I'll take them to school from 9 to 3:30, 4. I usually don't see them. I have practice in 1:15. So when I get home from school, home from practice, they're either just getting out of school or you're ready to go to bed. So it depends on the time of the day. So it all depends. What the schedule's like. Right now, the youngest one is definitely favorite. The youngest. youngest definitely the favorite right now. We keep charts throughout the week of who's the favorite child of the week. He's been winning by a landslide lately.
That always happens, though. That once other kids start going to school, getting in a little bit of trouble here and there, you know.
And they stink. They don't bother me. They just want to play with the iPads. They don't. I tell them all the time, I walk in the house and I'm like a ghost. They don't see me. So y'all don't say nothing to me.
They're used to you coming in and out all the time. That's why.
Yeah, I told them the other day when a nanny comes in, she get this big warm embrace. I walk in. hey you.
Hey, Dad, what's up?
The crossover test.
All right, man, you ready? They told you we had a test, right, to end this thing?
No, they didn't tell me that one.
They didn't tell you you had a EuroLeague test?
Nope. I don't remember reading that. Maybe I didn't read it.
You probably didn't read it. Come on, I got 5 questions, all right? Each one is worth the value of their number. So 1 is worth 10 points, 2 is worth 20 points, 3 is worth 30, 4, 45, 50. Let's see, I got, so far this year, I got Dante Exum at 100 points. He's leading everybody. I don't know how some Australian guy came out of nowhere and
definitely not going to get 100 points, but let's go.
You never know. Let's go. It goes from easy to hard, obviously, but... Question number one, where will the Final Four be played this season?
Calvis.
I guess if you don't know that, if you didn't know that one, we were gonna stop right there. Question number two, that's 10 points. Who was the last winner of the 7 days Euro Cup?
Bologna.
go. Dude, see, look at you, 30 points right off the bat. Against which team did Shane Larkin break the most points scored in one game record?
Munich.
Bayern. There you go. 3 for 3, 60 points. And I still fight with these guys about Shane. What he score, 49?
49.
It's not the European records. I got 63.
So they get the practice. I'm letting him know that.
No, he already knows. I already told him. And when I interviewed him, I sat down there.
He needs reminders sometime.
They said mine's not the real year. They're probably going to cut this out, too. They said mine's not the real year league. I'm like, man, it's, you know, if Zeljko Obradovic got 9 titles, why don't my 63 games, my points count?
No, I'm going to fight for you. Don't worry about it.
All right, good. Tell Shane he's 14 off the mark, as far as I'm concerned. All right, number 4, you got 60 points so far. You're looking good. You get this one, you tie Dante. How many finals have gone into overtime since the year 2000? Championship game only.
Since when?
Since 2000, since the year 2000.
2.
Damn, you got that one too. That's 100 points, brother. Can you name both of them or not? All you had to do is get 2. Can you name both of them?
I'm going to say Cheska's 1. Cheska versus Fenerbahce.
That was the one in Istanbul that we talked about.
I'm gonna say Maccabi and somebody else.
Real Madrid.
See? Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. I think I was at that game. I think that was in Milan, if I remember correctly. But yeah, all right, man, this is it. If you get 150, ain't no one beating you, I can tell you that. Here we go. Which player has the longest streak of 2-pointers scored in a row in EuroLeague games since the year 2000? That means consecutive 2-pointers scored. Not in one game, but the longest streak.
This longest streak since 2000.
You don't have to tell me how many. You just have to tell me the player.
You know, I'm going to go with a Spanish guy. Nope, I'm going with a Greek guy. I'm going to say... either Felipe Reyes or the foreman from Greece, Prindisis. One or the other.
No, it goes back a little bit more. It's Theo Papaloukas. You might not even know who he is.
He played at Chesky, didn't he?
Yeah, he played at Chesky also.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I see him on walls. He's still on the walls there. So
he's still on the walls. It's 2008-2009 season. He scored 22 2-pointers straight without missing.
Without missing?
Without missing, yeah. That's not bad.
That's impressive.
Dude, I appreciate your time. I know you got to get to practice here soon. Been dying to get you on this. Finally got you here. Thank you again for your time. Thank you for everything. The fact that I feel like we have so much in common because neither one of us, I mean, I wish you were interviewing me and you were 57. I was in your shoes. But but I will say that it's refreshing to know that there's other people like me that just kind of look back and like, man, I am not supposed to be here. I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world, man. I really am. And I feel like you feel the same way. So you appreciate everything that comes to you. And I appreciate you doing this for us, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, my man. Good luck to you. Have a good rest of the season.
All right, man.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.